compromising for him.
Members, you are welcome to this meeting, which is now officially open. We want to welcome all members of the committee. Welcome to the DG, the DTG, and your team from the Department of Trade and Industry that will be speaking to us today on the national liquor policy. There is a presentation that has been shared with us before. We'll get to that just now. Can we ask the staff to behave there now in the corner, please? We have agreed yesterday that we need an agenda, so I will present to you the agenda for this meeting. So it's the opening and welcome. Henceforth, our secretary will give us an agenda with the notice. Martin. Henceforth, we will get an agenda with the notice. Okay? So the first item would be the apologies. And the apologies, can I just check whether we do have any apologies? I do have an apology, a written apology that was sent to me by the Honourable High. You saw him leaving us yesterday. In his apology, he is indicating that he needs to consult with a surgeon to look at both his shoulder, his hip, as well as his knee, because the three seem to be connected in the discomfort that he is presently experiencing. So that's one apology. So the other members who are not here are absent. The next item that we need to look at is the minutes. We're not going to look at that now. And then also Honorable Chabango, we've agreed yesterday that we'll deal with an item called matters arising out of the minutes. But we're not going to deal with the matters arising in the same way. That as chairperson, I will look at the minutes and look at what are the matters arising that needs to be tabled, and we'll do a trial run on it first. You will read the minutes too. So initially, say for the next 3 months, we will allow you to also raise matters arising in the meeting. But after that, we're going to change it. If you have a matter arising, you must then send it through to the chairperson and the secretary before the meeting, because we don't want to do the matters arising in injustice, because I need to know how much time to allocate. And the primary function of this meeting is for us to engage with each other and whoever department or institution that is doing a presentation to us. And that would be the next item then on the agenda. After we have looked at the minutes, matters arising, which we'll deal with at the end of the meeting at the prerogative of the chairperson, we will then have the presentation. And on every presentation, we'll have opportunity for comments and questions. If there are any other things that you would want us to raise in this meeting, please put it to the secretary so that it can be shared with the agenda, with the notice of the meeting. Like, for example, today, there is our program. Do we have a copy of that? Our drafted program for the first 3 months of 2017. And we apologize that we do not have printed copies of that yet. But I will read it to you. It's a fairly non-controversial document. We'll read it to you and make sure that you get copies during the course of the day. Can we immediately then give over to the DG, Mr. October, and your team? Can you proceed, please?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I will be doing this presentation
led by MacDonald and Chichenje. I just wanted to make some opening comments, which Minister Rob Davies asked us to do. I mean, the first two points to make is, firstly, the reason this meeting is very important with the NCOP is because liquor regulations and legislation is a concurrent jurisdiction. As we know, as part of the Cordesa settlement, liquor and gambling is shared. And in a sense, most of the actual retailing of liquor is done at provincial level. So at the national level, we set policy and then norms and standards. And the second point to make is that this will now, does, I think, correctly provoke quite a debate in the country, which was the intention. So we have extended the period for comments for everybody, and it will now be 15th of December. So the whole thing is to have a big debate and discussion, and then after December, we'll take into account all the comments, and then we'll go back to Cabinet, and then come back to you for appropriate legislation and so on. The only big point to make is we want to provoke a very serious debate in the country and in the nation, because the alcohol abuse is, all research is showing, it is becoming extremely worrying, and alcohol abuse is on the increase. I think the one statistics which McDonald's will show you now is that the cost to the country is $37.9 billion per annum. That is the amount the state has to spend with alcohol-related road traffic accidents, alcohol treatment, welfare, crime, and so on. So the impact is not just at the personal level, but at the societal level and so on. The worrying factor is that it is increasing. And secondly, in terms of, if you look at the international situation, we are really in the top two or three nations in the world in terms of alcohol consumption. So we are outliers on the upper end. So it's not only in athletics and in cricket that we're doing very well, we're also the champions in drinking and so on. And I mean, the US, UK, and then South Africa is somewhere there, and so on. So what we want to say is that there's a range of measures which will be proposed, but really we are not married to those measures. But what we can't have, the minister says, is an attitude of laissez-faire, just let it be. Unfortunately, it is our and your, the executive and the legislature's responsibility to do something about that. And just before I conclude, as you know, the last time we had a major debate of this magnitude was with the tobacco and the smoking legislation. Again, there, it provoked a massive outcry. Everybody was saying, we're going to create this. There's going to be jobs lost. There's going to be the tobacco industry is going to come to a standstill. How can we have a Rolls-Royce model for a backward third world country? All those things. What we have seen is we are world leaders in tobacco legislation and in terms of anti-smoking. Everybody's still trying to catch up with us. France and so on is still having debates. But there's been a massive reduction in smoking in the country and so on. So the lesson is positive intervention does assist. So there is a case for making some bold interventions and so on. Final point is, there is a big controversy about the 500 meters, which McDonald will go into, but there is, as I said, at the national level, it's not going to apply to existing licenses. We're saying for new licenses. And it's a norm and standards we're saying at the national level. Of course, if there are particularities at the level, for example, if it's the area of tourism, high-density tourism area. There, of course, you can have different arrangements and so on, but that can be done via zoning and all those kind of things. But we're trying to just send a message that proliferation of especially shebeens is encourages certain kinds of behavior. And then there is research which was presented which is about the drinking age. Now, it's going to be a very big controversy, that debate, but the research was at the Indaba Medical Research Council presented the evidence to say that in terms of teenage drinking, until the brain forms, only becomes properly formed at the age of about 22 or so, and that especially the development of the mechanism which manages behavior, recklessness, that kind of mechanism is only developed. So if you damage the development of the brain at a younger age, it has a long-term impact on behavior and so on. So I'll hand over to my Donald to take us through the specific proposals.
The DG has already alluded to most of the issues that seem to be controversial. If I may add, when the minister was presenting at the Indaba, the Medical Research Council and the Department of Health said, "Minister, you are right in doing this 37.9 billion, the cost to the state. However, here's another figure, the indirect ones." And he alluded, and we're committing ourselves to send the presentation to the committee. Actually, it's 240 billion. 37.9, as the DG said, is direct, whatever. 240 billion, they can quantify, calibrate them. We will send the presentation from the Department of Health and MRC. So therefore, this is not a small play. This is what we need to take into account. Anyway, let me go back to my presentation. by way of introduction, is that the Liquor Act of 59 of 2003 was legislated there, and then before that, it was various legislation, and then there is a 1989 legislation. This legislation, as the DG said, is a concurrent jurisdiction. Liquor is a concurrent jurisdiction. The provinces are applying the 1989. All of them, 1989. If they want to graduate to a new one, they need to consult with the minister, and the minister agrees, and the 1989 is repealed. It's only Northern Cape and Western Cape that have repealed the 1989. So generally, the legislations that are being applied is to the 1989. It's an old legislation. So we said in the National Policy Council, Liquor Policy Council, that is the minister and the counterpart, the MECs, they form a council, and they come with policy direction, and then they also come with norms and standards. We have moved a lot, like trading hours, to say here are the norms and standards, trading hours, please take these trading hours and insert them in your legislation. It has not yet happened. So therefore, we are still running sort of a federal state in a unitary state. We need to move in one direction. So in 2010, the president established the Interministerial Committee on Combating Substance Abuse, chaired by the Minister of Social Development. That's where, therefore, in the main, the three ministers, our minister, trade and industry, health, and social development, they meet and discuss issues pertaining to liquor and substance abuse. And then other departments are joining, transport, so speed limits and accidents and the like. The issue of liability, we'll talk about liability. We extrapolated it from the Department of Transport, as advised by cabinet. And then the Department of Education is also coming to the party. So other departments like agriculture deals with the calibration of alcohol to say should we drink alcohol in the beer is 3%, 5%, 7% as goes the legend, is done by the Department of Agriculture. So you can see that the ministers are working together, and then actually the issue of age 21 manufactured in that area, lack of a better, in that area, and also cabinet said, let's deal with the issue of age. And then, So this is the introduction to say address and reduce the socio-economic cost of alcohol abuse in South African society and restructuring the liquor industry to promote wider participation and encourage transformation. So therefore, just to say, in the area of encouraging transformation, we will not per se come with another legislation. We will use the B Act, the Triple B Act legislation. It should be applied in this area. And then there are codes, and then there are levels, and the minister will prescribe the sort of the regulations. So the liquor regulatory framework is as follows. The bigger macro manufacturing is done at a national level. In other words, it's regulated at a national level. And then distribution is done at a national level, that is the regulation. And then there are liters, the 100 million, all those issues there. And then the other competency falls at the provincial level. And then it is the micro manufacturing. Anything that is less than macro manufacturing falls at the provincial level. The retail now. The shipping outlets, they are regulated at that level. But that policy concern that we talked about is the one that we try to harmonize so that we move to one direction. And then another issue to mention is that liquor is not a normal substance. It's not a normal substance. And therefore it is very harmful. The DG was emphasizing the issue of health. So because it damages the brain, the cancers of the stomach, all those issues, it needs to be regulated. It cannot be just left to chance. So the regulatory framework we have already mentioned, but there is the issue of the National Liquor Policy Council for cooperative governance. It's a structure created in terms of that section to coordinate concurrent jurisdiction. So therefore, where the parties agree, we can come and legislate in our different area of competency, in the national legislation and also at the provincial legislation. And therefore, we want to be going to the issue of saying, you are usurping the power of the provinces. Because it has been discussed and agreed, and therefore there won't be a sort of a contention in that area. And then it comprises of the minister and the counterpart, the MECs, the National Liquor Authority. It manages the macro manufacturers and the distributors. In other words, within the GTI, we have a chief directorate that does the registration of the big manufacturers and the distributors, and at the provincial level, they do implement their legislation, issuing licenses to shebeens. When I say shebeens, I also include taverns and other outlets. So What are the challenges for now? Socioeconomic impact of liquor abuse. Alcohol abuse is in the increase. The DG has already said it's in the increase. Maybe if I can also make an input here, we are saying there are few people in South Africa that drink. There is a percentage somewhere here. However, those who drink, they drink also for those people who don't drink. For them, therefore, that's why. So therefore, our drinking pattern, that's why it's so high in the West. So I hope I'm putting it now there.
They're not taking it to heart.
So we also have pregnant women who are drinking, and the fetus is becoming damaged. They call it fetal syndrome. It is one of the highest in the world, in particular in Northern Cape and Western Cape. Yeah, so we have a serious problem. Alcohol estimate, the DG has already said that 37.9 billion, and then we added 240 billion, we will produce evidence. So that's what we want to intervene and bring down. And then the issue advertisement, as an example, the DG talked about the tobacco legislation. I was reading in one of the newspapers, China is one of the most polluted countries. They are going to ban the tobacco, following, we said, the trend long term. So they want to follow us. They gave a statistic that so many millions are dying per year because of pollution. Therefore, is the issue of decision making. It's no longer the issue of saying, come with the evidence to assist me to take a decision. No, we can draw it from China as an example on tobacco, because also the Minister of Health is talking about introducing regulations in this area of tobacco. So therefore, we are saying, with us, the Act empowers us to restrict the issue of marketing liquor, where you use, is it Niekerk? Niekerk, the sportsman, as an example. You use him as an example to advertise liquor, and then the miners see him as a role model, and therefore liquor builds success. Those we are going to regulate through restriction of the section. Yes. So we are not in the banning. We are not yet there. But if it comes, it's another issue, but we are not there. So the issue, challenges again, research found that increase in alcohol availability contribute increases in alcohol consumption. Maybe if I can give a context of this issue of liquor availability. You can restrict advertisement is one of the restrictions, not to avail it to the public. Trading hours, to say, restriction is like advertisement, advertise at night or whatever, whether it's effective or not, we can discuss. But the issue of trading hours, you go to these various provinces, each one has got its own regime. So it's not desirable. So therefore, trading hours, if they are harmonized, and in provinces such as Limpopo, where it interacts with the Western Cape, they also interact with Gauteng and probably Bloemfontein, maybe Northern Cape, in that area. Here they close at this time, they move to that. If we are moving in a harmonized manner, we can make liquor not to be available, and it can be very effective. And then the issue of distributors, as an example, their trucks are transporting liquor not to warehouses, to shedding, straight to the shedding. And then we are saying we had regulations now to say don't do that, otherwise it's a criminal offense, as an example. So the other issue is the Department of Finance raising taxes too expensive. So therefore, can be another issue to make liquor not to be available. The last one may be the issue of age. So cumulatively taken, they can have an impact on access. The issue of 500 meters will come to it, but it is also to make it difficult for people not to have access to liquor. A good example is in the gambling. Why do we build our casinos in the bushes, as an example? I will talk about Carlsberg, which is far away, 39 kilometers from Pretoria. So that will create inconvenience. It is raining, you say, no, I'm lazy to go now. I'm not, cannot drive when it is raining. It's good, because it is a deliberate intervention. So if you can take all these interventions like that, you will see that we don't have a problem. So the issue of radius, liquor premises should be located at 500 meters. When we started with consultation, before we approached cabinet, we were of the view that there should be a transitional period. They should be moved out. We went to NEDLAC, Labour, and government were saying, move them out, because they are a nuisance in the locations and the like. But the Traders Association approached us to say, please, it will be a problem to disturb the rights that are already there. Why can't you say new entrances should no longer be given next to these premises like schools and churches? And then we agreed to that. And then, KZN came with a legislation recently, and then they legislated the 500 meters. So therefore, they have already set the tone that has already been agreed at the policy council. It's 500 meters in KZN, probably the other one will come. So these are the issues, but there's densely populated areas. There are areas that are like the local government, department, I'm looking for the name, the COGTA. Yeah, the COG, or the ATA is traditional, and the COG is the local. So we're working together. They produce a document to say, one day we are moving upwards, like Malaysia. You won't get these 500 meters. So therefore, give the powers to the local authorities, the boards, to allow discretion there. Respect the rights of other people. Nuisance, the law of neighbors, nuisance, littering, pollution, all those issues you should respect. And then people may go into a cafe in the densely populated area. The purpose is to eat, but I also want to drink. By the way, drinking liquor, we are talking about abuse of drinking here. We are not talking about drinking liquor is bad now. It may have health reasons, but we are saying people are drinking too much. That's what we are talking about. So therefore, in those cafes, the regulators should also have a discretion. Okay. So the trading hours we have already talked about. And then the issue of age verification, to say when you enter into the premises and then there is an outlet, they should look at me and say, am I above age 21 or what? And then they can even ask an ID or a passport. In other countries, actually, whether you are an adult or not, place-based, if, even if you are an adult, they want an ID so that they sell, to you. So therefore, the issue of age verification, is it has been proven in other countries like the U.S. and the like. So liability, the issue of liability is a common law principle in the law of delict. If your dog bites me, you will be responsible for medication and all other issues. You are liable because of your animal that caused harm on me. So in the area of consumer law, there is also a section that deals with product liability. If you manufacture a product and it poisons or is a takey, and then the sportsmen, women, they wear that takey of yours and you get injured. Therefore, because of mal manufacturing, therefore, that person can sue the person who manufactured the product. So here we are saying liquor is owned by the manufacturers, by the distributors, and inverted commas, say to the outlets. Somebody owns it. Now, at a manufacturing level, you find that it goes to illegal traders. Traders who are not licensed, and then people get into accidents because of you having supplied to an illegal trading entity. Therefore, we are saying you should be held responsible. We were advised, we were given legal advice by the state law advisors, and they said the Department of Transport has got a legislation like that. So perfect the drafting part of it. It is doable, therefore I'm just giving direction. So the distributors is the same issue. Now, the issue of the shebeens is the competence of the provinces. So therefore, if the shebeens are giving liquor to an already intoxicated person, and that person goes and calls out, therefore, that shebeen should be held responsible if something happens. I think we're moving towards, the issue of age. Age, we have jurisdictions like the U.S. is 21, Japan is 20, Switzerland is 16, I think. The Eastern Europe, they are in the 20s, and therefore we are saying we also need to move to this age. The reason is health. We're talking I beg it?
Poland is Eastern Europe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Eastern Europe.
Yeah,
no problem. Okay, no problem. Yeah, we will check here, but what I'm saying. So all in all, what we are saying is that there is a problem of health. The DG was talking about the diseases, the judgment, that you can no longer read and pass judgment correctly if you started to drink at an early age. It ends up at 21 to 25, that's when the brain stops, is matured. But if you drink this harmful substance too much, you find that at the age of 18, you are already a drunkard. So therefore, issues like innovation and the like, they've stopped. So the health people are saying there is a problem. Let's intervene. That's what we are doing. And then we are saying also in this area, like the issue of tobacco banning, is an issue of decision making. The evidence we can produce, the Eastern Europe countries that are in that area, and then the African countries that are also in that area, they differ, but it's a decision making by the legislature. So education and awareness, we are saying there is a need for us not to punish people always. We must come maybe with corporate leniency. Let's say if the bill is passed, as an example now, this year, we may say for the 6 months or 1 year, let's do education and awareness. Each one knows his or her own responsibility. And thereafter, there is no longer mercy. As an example, the Competition Commission did that, and then it worked very well. So these are the issues that we are talking about. The issue of transformation, we did a study. We did a study on the transformation issue. We were advised that areas like competition law, they should also apply. Why are we talking about competition law? As you know, in South Africa, 2003, we wanted to change the law to say we must have manufacturing only. It must be owned by one person. The second person must own distribution. The third person must own retailing. So, but we didn't pass that test. As for now, manufacturing, distribution, retailing is owned even by one person, the big multinational, whatever. So they own that. So therefore, there is no real transformation there. So let's start to talk about transformation in the area of BEE. I've already alluded to it to say there are codes of conduct, there are levels that the minister will prescribe. Otherwise, all these outlets that we are saying, we are taking business out of them and the like. There may be extensions. They are given fridges to supply liquor. There are issues that there is no empowerment. So we are in this area. And then we are moving to conclusion, I think. Differences in the area of standard aspects of regulation. We have already mentioned that we work with other departments, South African Police, Agriculture, SARS, and then transport. So this is an interministerial issue, and then we think it is going to work. And then the regulatory capacity within the NRF is that the chief directorate within us, we agree that we have few inspectors, but we are empowered in terms of the bill and the act. We are just perfecting it to move to issue of designating inspectors. Let's say the police, they can come to say we have passed this standard, train us in liquor aspect. Therefore, the minister is convinced, and then the prescribed course is passed, and then we designate them. That is the minister designating them in order to build capacity in this area. Internal review mechanism. What happens is that when the minister signs certificate, we sign certificate on behalf of that, of the minister, you find that maybe there is one technical mistake. That's an example. The minister is not empowered to correct his own mistake. It has to go to court. Any dispute that arises because you are challenging the National Liquor Authority within the DTI, you need to go to court. So we are saying we are amending the legislation in order to have internal dispute resolution inside. I can do this. Tomorrow we say, no, the decision is wrong. There is another committee that should sit and decide on it. And then later you say, no, I'm not happy. You can go to court. But we can have internal mechanisms that are very simple, because we are here to make business, not to play in court. Yes. So the other issue is that to improve the effectiveness I've already dealt with. And then in conclusion is that it is believed that the policy position in the National Liquor Policy 2016 will ensure that regulation of liquor industry will continue to be conducted in an efficient, effective, harmonized manner with the provinces. So the issue of constitutionality probably will not come into play because issues are discussed at the National Liquor Policy Council because of concurrent jurisdiction. So from my side, through your chair, maybe the DG would like to conclude at an aspect.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chenda. Members, there we have it. Let me just say a few things. So one is when Rebecca and I were looking at our program for this year, we felt that it is going to be important that we have this presentation now because of the seriousness of it, that we can then have the practical experience when we are back in our constituencies and come back next year. But as the DG has said, there is the draft policy document that you have a copy of before you, which is before us, and comments thereto have been extended to the 15th of December. So it would be good for us then also to look at how we can encourage people to actually engage and comment on this. I've just looked at this, DG, I mean, apart from the amendment that has been given to us. Facebook has become a very interesting tool of communication. And I could say there's nothing wrong if you attach in your Dropbox, maybe copy this, attach a link to the Dropbox on this, and distribute it as widely as you possibly can. It's not a private document. We are a people's parliament, and the document is meant to be helpful to people in terms of engaging with the policy document. My final comment on it would just be to say that as legislatures, we are going to have to then next year deal with two things. The one is what will be in the Government Gazette, the policy, but that would relate to the regulations. Then we'll have to look at, as we come to finalization of that, whether there would be a need for any amendments to the Liquor Act itself. And we would decide at that time how exactly we will deal with it. So I'm raising that with you now, honorable members, so that we are mindful to store these things in memory so that when we engage with it at that other level of developing the policy document and the legislation that we're clear for that, we will have to go out into the provinces and have the consultations with communities and provincial legislatures on that. But we are here on behalf of provincial legislatures, so that look at that. Allow me to just say, Honorable Lond, welcome. We have heard about the difficulties in the family, and we are thinking of you at this time. Let's engage with the presentation, Honorable Members. I note Honorable Faber, who is from Northern Cape. No, one of the problems where we're sitting with a big problem with alcohol fetal syndrome. Sure.
Give me the thing. Give it to me. Chairperson, I noticed this thing on display during the meeting of this council, of this committee, and it's in DA colors. I suspect it must be coming from a DA member. I'm not sure if it's parliamentary for members to do this in meetings of committees, because in my view, rules of council apply also in committee meetings. Can you please make a ruling on that?
The ruling is quite clear, honourable members, that we know in terms of the rules of the House, we are not allowed to display any party regalia.
Chairperson, through you, just please, if I may respond, just to put the record straight. This is mine, for the record. It fell. And I think the gentleman next to me, the honourable member, picked it up, but he's going to step back. So it, there was no malice or anything.
Thank you.
But I own it. I'm an APA member.
I truly believe you, because I have the greatest of respect for the integrity of the members of this committee. But thanks for raising that. I mean, when those things happen, you know, sometimes we come here and I rush quickly from caucus, and I may forget to take off my ANC identity. Then it's proper that the House reminds us that we should not display that. But thanks, Honourable Timonier, for raising it, and thanks very much for explaining that in a manner that is quite understandable. So I notice Honourable Faber. Then I notice Honourable Mahwebu, who is from Eastern Cape. I said to the DG, now the other members of DGI may not know that he is a new member. Sir Roj, I see in your emails, you still send emails to Honourable Van Lingen. He is replacing Honourable Van Lingen. I hope that you have his email contacts as well. He gives you lots of stuff. You get at least four every day. And they're all very helpful. I'm going to comment on one of them now, which is the meeting that's happening in Addis, where they call it the Africa Trade Week. It's arranged by UNTA of the UN. And the secretary of UNTA, as I said yesterday, commended South Africa, and this is one of the things where we are taking the lead in introducing into the developing world legislation that is quite radical, quite controversial, that may not be accepted by those who have financial interest. And these are the type of things that's being discussed at the moment in Addis. And if we didn't get those mails, we would not know. So that's Honourable Mukwebu from the Eastern Cape. Then we have Honourable Chabangu here, who is also a new member. He is from the Free State. Let's have you in that sequence, please, Honourable Faber.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just like almost off record, I just feel in this committee, I think really we've got a very good working relationship, and we mustn't become petty about things sometimes. And I really want to say that, because I feel that eventually that discourages us in having the good relationships that we do have. And I don't want us to eventually go into that type of mode, because I see that usually in the NCOP we really do have a very good working relationship with each other. So I would please ask all members of all parties, let us not be petty about some things, because eventually what comes around goes around.
So and there's nothing petty here. Can I come in here? I must respond to this one. There's nothing petty here. Rules of counsel applies also in committee meetings. They don't get suspended.
There was no
so there's nothing petty here. And I make no apology to raising that matter. I'm a whip of this committee, and I'm a member of the ANC.
Okay.
I will not allow any party to advance its interests in a committee meeting where I happen to be a whip.
It
will not happen. I don't care who says what. I make no apology.
Don't let your ANC registers come around my table again. Thank you. Chairperson, right, let's get to the serious stuff. Chairperson, first I would like to start by, I really believe that the new act as it stands now, I think there's a lot of lapses on that. I don't think a lot of it has been thought through correctly, and I'm going to qualify why I'm saying that. We are trying to regulate it by saying certain times, certain ages, etc. You were talking about Eastern Europe. Now, I've married an Eastern European woman, and I get to Eastern Europe quite often. Now, I can say to you, like in Poland, Ukraine, and some of these Eastern European countries, alcohol abuse was much worse than in South Africa 23-24 years ago, and it all started because of no jobs and because of poverty. People actually started drinking vodka, and this is why people still laugh at the Russians and the Polish by saying, yes, these people are drunks with vodka. And it was because of poverty and because they grabbed to liquor to get out of this whole thing of not thinking about the Second World War. Now, if you go and look at shops in Poland and Ukraine and these places, you will find that it's not liquor shops that just sell liquor. Convenience stores sell it, and from the morning 7 o'clock to 11 o'clock sometimes, depending on what time they are open. And what actually happened in the last 20 years, and I would like you to go and do a study on this if you want to. I've spoken to a lot of people because I was asking this question, that liquor abuse actually declined dramatically in the last 20 years in this Eastern European countries. And the reason for that is because their economies were starting to thrive. They came out of this economic depression, if I can say that. People started finding jobs. And what happened is when people start getting dignity and they find starting jobs, they don't drink that much for some reason. So to say that we have to start regulating by putting specific times on it and trying to regulate children must not be 21, I think we're trying to get a cure instead of finding the problem. And I really do believe this is what we should start looking at, where the problem lies. Because we can find cures. It's like policing. I really believe that policing Eddie by smoking is not going to help him smoke less. Sorry, Honorable Chair, but what I'm trying to say is we must find what the reason is for that. Maybe it's addiction. When we get to the Northern Cape, where I am, I know in some of the places they still have that dopstelsel thing that is a thing of the apartheid regime that came all the year on the farms and stuff. And I still believe it does happen on some farms. These type of things we have to get out from the root. It must be stopped. But I really think we are looking holistically here at the bill and saying 500 meters from church. Is this going to really make a difference to say that if it's 300 meters? I think we must start looking at this. I really believe we are missing the boat on these type of things. I just want to stop on that. And by saying as well, on trading hours, for instance, in the Northern Cape, if you want to buy beer, you can go there at 8 o'clock on a Saturday, you can buy. But in the Western Cape, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, liquor stores are closed. You can't get anything. And then some other liquor shops in the Western Cape, I see till 6 o'clock you can find. So different, you know, they've got different regulations. I don't know exactly how they work on that. But I am in 100% agreement. There must be a regulation on hours. But we should not, I certainly do believe that we should not think that that's going to be the cure of the alcohol abuse. I really believe we start at education, and if you get the economy going, I think from there we're going to sort out a lot. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mocho.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG and the team. Appreciate the presentation. And I appreciate the strides to address the challenges we're facing. Whilst we're talking the challenges, I want to focus just on the two challenges and your proposed, and remedial action to address those. The age verification, and secondly, the issue of the intoxicated persons. My question is, with all these good intents, but the issue is on compliance. How do we enforce compliance? What do you have in mind? Because it's a complex matter when it comes to compliance altogether. Are you going to go to the shippings and ensure that this person is already drunk, therefore the liquor outlet or the shipping mustn't be selling liquor further to this person sitting on the round table now, still drinking when he's drunk? Issue of age verification, are you going to enforce compliance and ensure that liquor outlets and shippings, and when the patrons walk in, they are indeed, if we agree, age 21, that the outlets are enforcing that, they ensure that this person is indeed age 21. And are you ready with that? And how do you propose to enforce that compliance? That's my first question. The second question will be on the issue of liability. Now, on liability, are we talking, you know, because I heard the Honorable, the Presenter, Mr. McDonald, talking about civil liability. I want to talk about the criminal liability. Are we including criminal liability here to say if the liquor outlet or the shipping king or queen is selling alcohol to a person or is found to have been selling alcohol to the person who is under the age as stipulated, is guilty of a criminal offense? These are two different things, the criminal liability and civil liability. Can I get clarity on that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. I think most of the things that I wanted to allude to have already been dealt with, but let me just say, Chairperson, the municipalities, I think they must reconsider their bylaws and amend them, because you find that there are those shippings that close at 12 o'clock. Where I come from, others closes at four o'clock, and people would drink up until 12 o'clock. 4 o'clock, they move to those that are closing at 4 o'clock. And when people go to work, you'll find that it is a disaster. People are drunk. They are attacking people. They are vulnerable. Number two, the retailers, you find that they sell liquor in a bulk to shippings that do not have licenses. And that results into a mess, because there is now a competition between those that have got license and those that have not licenses. And I think that should be also amended. Thank you.
Thank you very much. DJ and your team, can we get back to you?
Yes. No, thanks for those initial comments. As I said, it's a the discussion stage and so on. So we're not going to respond in a sense of answering, but just to raise it for debate. I think the main point is that we are saying that we have a duty. There are what is called the public bads that has to be regulated. And in every country in the world, you regulate gambling and you regulate liquor. So it's not a So it is irrespective of how well you're doing as a country, you still have to set norms and standards for that country. There is, I think, where you write, Honorable de Lange, is...
Faber.
Honorable Faber is...
Long
and I hear he's not drinking for sure. Honorable Faber, I think, as you said, every country's history does inform its level of consumption, and there's a problem, but it's not related to growth. So, for example, because there was a prohibition in the U.S., the reason you have big binge drinking in the U.S., because they banned, as you know, liquor for about 15 years. You couldn't drink. So people went underground, and then they, in the shortest time, you must drink as much as you can. So that is the origin of the binge drinking there. In our situation, because of the DOP system, we've got the highest alcohol fee to observe in the world. And the reason is simple. It's because there was the DOP system. It was worse than slavery, because at least with slavery you got no money and you got food, but in South Africa you got wine. So it is a particular problem. And as you said, in Eastern Europe and Russia, because of particular circumstances, there was drinking. But a country must decide to have appropriate ways of curbing abuse, especially when the abuse happens. I think that is why we've come in with the age and the 500 million. There is too much of a proliferation of alcohol outlets, especially in the townships. And you have to do something about that. You can't have it on every street corner as there should be. And you will see that the amount of alcohol abuse, assaults, domestic violence, and so on, is correlated to the amount of alcohol being available everywhere in every street. You'll find those areas are particularly prone and so on. So we must have a regulation. So we're trying to say, let's balance it. Let's say people who have existing licenses, okay, let's not tamper with them. But we're saying if a problem, if you have to issue new licenses, let's set some norms. What the norms are, if it's 500 meters or 600 meters or 200 meters, not the issue. The issue is let's set up standards. Should you have it near a school? Should you have it near a church in the new one? And we're just saying let's have some norms. Because remember, we're setting norms and standards. The provinces will work out the detail because they issue the actual licenses. And there are certain areas where you can have more, and especially alcohol with eating and in restaurants. There you can get more because there it's okay. It's not just a drinking hole. But we allow that flexibility and so on. I think the second point to make is that I think Honorable Mkhwebo raised the issue of the enforcement, which is the key issue. And that's why we're saying we must have a specific regime for a higher level of professional inspectors, a training to looking at enforcement of the issue. And we're saying that must take place. So it's a question of having at least really good laws and good regulations, ones that are workable, and then working out strong in enforcement and so on. And then finally, I want to just raise the issue is that obviously it depends on every country what is works best for you. For example, in Europe, the drinking age is 16 in many countries, but you find the lowest level of abuse. So, I mean, I was posted to Belgium, where, as I said, it's 16, people can start drinking, but you learn in your family responsible drinking, and people usually associate the drinking with eating a meal. So you once you've socialized in that environment, you don't do binge drinking, and you find very seldom young people doing binge drinking. But if you would just go across the channel to the UK, you find it equally or worse than South Africa in terms of teenage binge drinking. And there the age is 18 in the UK. It's higher than thingy, but it's worse the problem. So I think it's a lot of a thing about setting proper norms, but also having a proper debate and discussion about the dangers of especially abuse in the young age. But it looks like the young age sets the pattern for future drinking. So that's why we want to introduce the debate about the age. Because, as I said, in Europe, you've got the highest level of, let's say, responsible drinking from young people. And somehow we must, but we face the opposite problem. We face a similar problem in the U.S., where it's very binge drinking and alcohol abuse is very high. In the U.S., they had to introduce it used to be 18, they moved it to 21. They've seen an immediate reduction in the amount of accidents, fatalities on the road, and so on. So there was a big improvement in the U.S. But some people saying, but maybe you've just driven it underground, and so on. But at least it's a debate. The U.S. did something on the statistics that has improved when they moved it from 18 to 21. Whether it will happen in our case or not, I think that's the debate we just want to encourage. And then I think the liability issue, maybe McDonald.
Yeah, just to add on what the DG was talking about, the U.S. going to 21, accident dropping. New Zealand, let's say it was 18, and then it went to 21, and then accidents dropped. They reduced it to 18 because of pressure. Accidents escalated. So these are the two jurisdictions that we can quote. And then the issue of liability enforcement. If enforcement is true that it is done by inspectors, the police and the like, but the responsible traders, if they are educated themselves, and then we take punitive action against them, like suspending the license, if they are not verifying the age, it's one of the issues of enforcement. As an example. So we are talking about civil liability, criminal liability. I've forgotten my criminal law, but there is intention and mens rea, which is negligent, and the direct intention. Now they introduce eventualis.
So that criminal liability we're not dealing with here, the reasonable man's test. We're dealing with civil liability to say that you saw that your product will cause harm, and then the probability, we use the test of probability, which is lesser than the issue of a reasonable man's test. So we are talking about civil liability here, and then it will be a deterrent in our view if you are sued because you caused death to this person. The DG has covered a lot of things, but the issue of municipalities, the bylaws, is true. The metros that we have, when we did the consultation long time, we found that the bylaws are not the same. It's only Itekwini, which is sort of unifying. The rest, you go to Gauteng, meaning Johannesburg, sorry, the age. Yes, thank you. Johannesburg has got different ones, and then Pretoria, different ones, probably Rustenburg, although it's in another one. So it's Nismasar. In Gauteng, what is happening? You find that the board, the authority, that license, and the zoning, the municipality, town planning, they are not talking. So this one gives the license, you go and operate there, contrary to the zoning one. So these are the issues that we are saying in the policy council. We need to come with these amendments, Honorable Shabangu. It will take time, but I think we are moving to that direction, that we must also deal with COPTA. COPTA must be in the equation. And then DG, I think the issue is that we are intervening only in our area of competence, regulation. But the economy, how it is operating, is another issue. But we are making our small contribution from that direction. I hope retailers, retailers as an example, let's take Macro. Macro is a shop, it's a wholesale. It is a wholesaler. We talk about the distributor. It may be a national competence. It may be a provincial competence. As an example, we set in the norms to say, the moment you sell more than 25 liters, if I'm not 25 liters, start to question to say, no. Every day you come and buy more than 25 bulk of liters, where are you going to then? Do you have a licensed outlet or what? You don't care. So we think here we also want, through these norms and standards, and encroached into the bill, that's where we will deal with the issue of this selling of bulk irresponsibly. We say, no, it should stop. Otherwise, it's a mixed muscle outside there. So that's all. TG, I think we dealt with other.
Was the one on liability, is it civil or criminal?
It's civil, but I said what we will achieve by that is that because the person is liable to be sued, they will then try to obviously exercise some due care and diligence so that they won't serve, let's say, obviously drunk people. So what we're saying, because there's no liability, in other countries, once they've said to people you are liable, people then will take care to ensure that they don't do that behavior. So it's a way of influencing. But currently now, it's very easy to get away with it. You can serve people who are drunk, already intoxicated. There's no liability. So we want to at least introduce this thing into the pot so that people, when they do serve liquor, they will curb their behavior because they know they could be sued if they serve in an obviously drunk person.
I notice that there's two hands. Allow me to just come in and make my contribution here as well. I want to particularly speak on slide number 5. In the initial remarks, DG, you indicated that liquor is in essence consumed within communities at the local level. And if we are looking at the process, I'm obviously supportive of the importance of ensuring two things. The one is that we encourage responsible drinking, and the two is that we look at the cost of drinking to the country and the figures that you have given to us. Now, the local retail level is where you have a concern, and you have now just informed us as well that there are different regulations from the municipalities. Can you give us an assurance that in the process of consultation and also when it comes to implementation, that indeed the regulations of the provinces would be such that even if we have differences at the municipal level, that we would ensure that the objective of responsible drinking and the cost is still addressed, that we are not therefore dependent on the municipal regulations for it. Because there's this distinction between regulations and the law and the acts. That's the one question. The second one that I have is the consultation process that you are pursuing. We know that there are civil society organizations. We have, for example, the National Religious Leaders Forum. Are you waiting on them to comment, or are you, as DTI, taking proactive action to approach such influential organizations? Now, I would just want to mention two. The one is the National Religious Leaders, and then the second one is the organization of taverns. It may not be a national organization, but are you approaching that? Because in the legislative process, we know that laws have meaning if people understand and apply them. And I don't think that the owners of taverns would necessarily be opposed to the idea of responsible drinking. Some of us have been in taverns when you see what happens when there is irresponsible drinking. There's breaking and destruction and accidents and deaths. And the tavern owners don't want that either. Many of our tavern owners wants to run a good business. And how do you consult with that sector, even now with the extension that has happened? Let me leave it at that for now. Honorable Faber, I noticed that you wanted to come in for a second round. Let's bring in Honorable Faber, then have Honorable Ntebe, and then we go back to Honorable Makhwebo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you almost touched on it, Honorable Chair, and that is about the cost of liquor. I really believe if we can tax some tax, it must be dramatically increased. I really believe, you know, as soon as you have liquor available at such affordable prices, people will always be able to drink as much as they want and actually overdo it. But I really do believe if you can put such a sin tax on, if you go to Dubai, you would know yourself, to buy a beer is going to cost you like 140 rand a beer. So you think twice before having your second beer, and you drink very slowly on your first beer. So I'm just thinking about this, that if I'm talking about, I know my pocket felt. So all I'm trying to say is, if you can sin tax liquor so dramatically, I really do believe that you can actually, I know people drinking would not like me saying this, but I also have my beer now and then, but the reality is, that you will actually, I believe, if there's a huge sin tax on drinking, you can actually already say you're off the problem. Thanks, Jake.
Honourable Ntebe is from Northwest.
Let me just confirm what Honourable Fawad said. See, the difficulty has been following the discussions in your public platform, DG. And the discussion about syntax it's a delicate environment for us, striking a balance between business conducive environment versus what we want to do. And I think taxes are not an ideal kind of a situation that we would, as opposed to radius and age, which are not going to have any financial burden on the business sector, for instance, and make sure that we do that. But also quite welcoming, and I think it's something that I've seen that it's also been accepted generally. It's the grandfathering clause that you have that says all the existing ones will be then grandfathered so that we cannot be able to temper them. But of course, with this necessary emphasis that moving into the future, new establishment, that intergovernmental relations between municipalities as designated authorities and the legislation is quite... But I think we must all agree that legislation needs to have a level of irritation. If it doesn't have irritation, then it does not serve a purpose. I remember when we started about the issue of regulating smoking in the country, there was a big wallabaloo about how we are going to, we're going to kill business. Today, as a non-smoker, I can walk into a restaurant peacefully and walk out and have the pleasant of time. And I think we've been able to make necessary strides in making sure. But I think the liability, if, and this thing we can show you a trail of, there's litter of examples where the burden should be placed on the manufacturer and the suppliers. It's simple as that. I can tell you, I share a border with Honorable Faba. I'm from Taung, which is the last part before you enter Northern Cape. If you go to Northern Cape and you go 120 kilometers away from Upington, you go to a place called Kakamas, and you look at the level of alcoholism there, you don't need to do your research. Wake up in the morning, take a jog, and look at young people, very young, with kids at times, sitting down, drinking themselves to the pub. And that's something that we want to care. We are not saying there's something wrong with alcoholism. I don't drink, but I prefer that people who want to drink must drink responsibly. And that's what I want to say. But if you go to Taung, which is my hometown today, and you look at the level of substance abuse, which in the main starts with consumption of alcohol, it's skyrocket. And that's something that we want to keep. And I think from where we're sitting, we are moving into the right direction. However, if we don't close the loop between government spheres going down, so that our bylaws can speak into the legislation that we want to do. But like I said, legislation must have a pitch. If it doesn't, it does not serve a purpose. Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, I'm worried about the issue of liability, and I'm hoping I'm not dragging it. But I just want to bring a case scenario, because this will lead us to a legal dilemma. Because if we are not putting criminal responsibility, I'm of the view that the best practice would be to bring both civil and criminal liability. Because if you don't do that, because civil liability is a difficult issue in that the victim is expensive to litigate, that is to do civil litigation. But on the criminal liability, if you put it, then you are then able to ensure that we are bringing more deterrence on the part of the store outlets or liquor outlets, because the state is dominus litis. He or she will be charged by the state. And so these are the issues. And there's a practical dilemma here. In my previous life, I headed the provincial investigations for SASA on fraud and compliance. The Social Assistance Act 1324, read with the regulations, fell short. It did exactly the same mistake you gentlemen are going to do, only pushing civil liability. Then there was a new phenomenon of the loan sharks that was never criminalized, both in the Act and right with the regulations. And we had to deal with that dilemma. Where these loan sharks were keeping the SAFA cards, the debit cards of the grant beneficiaries. And therefore, that was illegal. Civilly, they could deal with it, but criminally, you had no legal basis. Fortunately, through research, we found a piece of legislation, the National Credit Act, which is a fantastic piece of legislation, well researched, well thought. That became our legal basis to prosecute or to bring prosecution. So I want to suggest and appeal and say, reconsider, bring both. It helps. It brings stronger deterrence. And no one would want to sit with a criminal record, I promise you. So they'll be very careful in terms of compliance. That's just my view. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, listening to the comments that have been made, I must say two things. Honourable Mahwebu, you don't appeal to DTI. As a committee, we say to them that this is what you need to look at. We are the legislatures, not the department. But honourable members, the reason why I'm doing that is to say that we as members of Parliament can't, when the legislation is developed, then say, but no, it's weak legislation. It's because we have not engaged rigorously with it. And the reason why we have this committee meetings is precisely because we bring that up. You have other fora in which we can do it as well. You can do it in your declaration in the House. You can make it in presentations to the department. But we must engage rigorously. And what I particularly like about the comments is that we are not just raising questions, but saying to you that from our experience, I mean, where you go back to social development and say, and I could say it because I looked at the responses from the DG and DDG, and they were saying, yes, we agree. So thanks for that. But then also the point that you have made, Honourable Ntebe, it's something that has come out in earlier points as well, about the fetal alcohol syndrome and the use of alcohol within some of our impoverished communities, and many of us will be able to share painful examples. And I'm asking myself, but where do people get that liquor? I remember the old Pau Palais, which was a cheap liquor that makes you drunk quicker. Now, this policy that we're looking at now, DG, is it intended to also look at that problem, or must we deal with that problem separately? Because if we look at the fetal alcohol syndrome, those people are not drinking Johnny Walker Green. With their whole year's salary, they will not be able to afford that. But what we find is that there are cheaper, what we call it, you can get a kick. You can get a kick at a better price. And what people are doing is that in the process of that consumption, they are also destroying themselves. I can remember as a little boy there in Cape Town how people used to make a drink. And then they would take Honorable Chabango, you will remember that one, where they take the bag of tobacco and they'll put the tobacco in the alcohol as well to give it a stronger kick. Now, when we look at the manufacturing and the quality of the product, can you just help us to say how do we impact on ensuring that that is also addressed at the same time that we're looking at the devastating impact of alcohol on our society. Honorable Timunya, it looks like you're itching. Are you okay? Can I check with the other members? We're all okay. So that will be our last round.
I think, as you said, you're coming with very clear suggestions and proposals as well. So let me just say then, I think we will take that into the discussion, and thanks, it's really, because we want, this can strengthen the legislation. And I think Honorable Debbie's point about let's have something which has an impact, has a bite. And then the suggestion on Honorable Huevo about let's look at both criminal liability and civil liability, and we can look at that. And then I think the point you and Honorable Faber has raised is the question of price. And this increasing the sin tax, I think we'll also take that, because as you know, even in the UK now, it's the same issue which they're introducing, because the cheaper alcohol has the highest alcohol content, and that is encouraging people because it's cheap and you get the maximum kick. It is what is called the binge drinking. So they are trying to raise the price of those ones and so on. So I think it's right, they're getting the proper mix and so on. And then, Honorable Chair, your final point, which I think we must really take on, is the voices. We did in the Indaba, we really tried to invite the churches and NGOs. We're not as successful because the dominant voice is the industry is very strong in this country. As you know, we've got a virtual monopoly of SA breweries who have almost 90% of the market. And you've got a very concentrated industry, Stellenbosch Farmers. You've got two or three producers which take up 100% of the market. Nowhere in the world do you have that. So they have a very powerful voice, and they pay a number of people from Free Market Foundation to everybody. You could see the articles in the newspapers are written by people who are anti the legislation. They are paid by lobbyists for the industry. Mm-hmm. So. And we're saying there's a conflict of interest here, that the profits is linked to having as much alcohol consumption as possible. So my job, they pay lip service to responsible drinking. It runs against their fundamental monetary interest. So we must try to, we're trying to say, let's take them, and we must hear the other voices of where the damage is in our communities. So I think we want to welcome a greater participation of the churches, the NGOs. So thanks for your suggestions on that and so on. But Honourable Chair, I think this is very useful. It's the first time we've received such positive suggestions as well to deal with the problem. So we will try to then strengthen it, because usually what we've been getting is pushback to actually drop everything. That's been the push. So I think it's a really helpful discussion. So thanks for that.
No, thanks. On this issue of cheaper illegal the alcohol is defined in our legislation, but the Department of Agriculture also deals with this issue. I think there is a bill. I'm looking at my colleague there. There is a bill. We encourage that maybe the committee should also interact with the sister community, committee, because I think it is at a parliamentary level, so that we should start to dovetail. At the interdepartmental level, we are consulting, so that we deal with this issue of saying, you come with tighter legislation from our side, but they go into illegal underground and the like. So let's close in a harmonized manner. The issue of burden of proof, it is there in the policy and the bill to say liability. When we are in court, you are not guilty until you are proven not guilty. It's the other way around. Now it shifts to you to say, didn't you prove that you didn't supply liquor to an intoxicated person? So the burden of proof, Honorable Ntebe, it is there. Criminal liability, we appreciate that. It is in one of our laws that we manage, so we will deal with that. So generally, the churches, the DG has already said, we work with Traders Association. Churchill Mukasi is a president, if I'm not mistaken. they are the ones who convince us not to go retrospectively. Grandfathering. Yeah, they are the ones. We are working together. So thanks for the advice. Am I right? Thanks.
Thank you very much. Some of us come from the school where you always get homework. DG, I'm struggling with this thing, and Honorable Faber raised it now. The syntaxes. Many of us don't know exactly how much there are. DTI, can you help us? Particularly, let me mention four products. What's the syntaxes on cigarettes? I heard that it's 50% by someone who's in British Tobacco Company, so that we understand that. The second one is the taxes on alcohol. Now, we remember the times when Trevor Manuel was our Minister of Finance, and he would always tease the other members of Parliament about the increases on some taxes. The third one is a very interesting one, which is the taxes on fuel. You know, now we heard yesterday, Honorable Chavang, fuel is coming down 41 cents and people are saying, but we don't always know. How do you get to know what's the percentage of taxes that is calculated within fuel? And then the third one is one that we will not be able to get a clear answer on, but it's on the question of tariffs. Now, I've just looked at the demonstrations that are happening in Lesotho on AGOA, and I was talking to someone and saying, we have many of these landlocked countries on the African continent. So if trade between Lesotho and the United States happen. I know that in SADC we have a policy position where we're saying that no, all the taxes and trade tariffs would be collected centrally and then distributed once per annum. But if Lesotho is now exporting to the United States and their goods travel through South Africa, who collects tariffs on that? And the same with the other way around. If goods come in from India into Swaziland, and there's trade tariffs on that, who is responsible for the collection of that? I would assume that it would be the port of entry. But it's going to be important for us as members to begin to see that, because we are moving into a very interesting era of our economic policy framework now, where because of our increased trade and because of our fiscal challenges, we cannot rely on personal income tax, but only for generating money for the fiscus. And many of us have the difficulty, and it enriches our discourse and our debate if we have an understanding of that. So, DJ, I'm not asking you to give us the answers here now necessarily, but if you can delegate someone in the department and just send us, we will appreciate that. Members, are there any? This is our last meeting for the year.
Are you hosting a closing party?
Yes.
Are you buying the liquor?
No, you should know. You should know, as a member of our Honorable Mokwebo, you didn't know. You didn't know that, Honorable Mokwebo. As a member of Parliament, you can also claim back some syntaxes. Honorable members, are we then through? DG, can we ask you and your team to bear with us for 2 minutes? We're going to be quick in terms of the minutes. The minutes have been distributed to us beforehand, honourable members. The minutes before us is the meeting that was held on the 9th of November. We were all there. It was a big attendance. Then on page 2, there is the opening and welcome proceedings, the general overview, which was the report that was presented to us by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and also the African Renaissance Fund. The human resource management, and they have gone through it all. We see the African Renaissance Fund as point 3, and then we adjourned at 12:30. Honorable Mtimunya drew our attention to the importance of looking at matters arising, because for the second time, we have asked DIRCO to give us more information on the African Renaissance Fund, and we have not received that. So we're noting that on the Mtimunya as a matter arising, that we're asking our secretary, Rebecca, to follow up with the DIRCO. We want that report by Friday of this week. Right, so that's the one matter arising. Are there any other matters arising before we adopt the minutes? No.
No.
Thank you very much. Can we have a proposal then for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Mtimunya, seconded by Honorable Chabangu, was sharper than you on the draw this time around. Seconded by Honorable Chabangu. Thank you very much. Honorable members, it has been a real pleasant experience to have worked in the way we did for this year. Thank you very, very much for that. We trust that we will all have a restful period. I must just say, there's two things, sorry. That's why it's good to have an agenda. The other is just our first term program for next year. And I'm going to do two programs with you. She didn't, but I asked her to email it for me, the copy of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. Let's deal with the one on trade and international relations first. We have scheduled the study talk for the 27th January to the 4th of February during that period. Then on the 30th of January to the 2nd of February, we also have the NCOP committees oversight week. Remember I raised it yesterday where I said there's a conflict between the study talk and the committee's oversight week. That will be sorted out. On the 8th of February, we will have a briefing by the South African Tourism, which was a briefing that was meant to have happened last week. On the 9th of February, there's a joint sitting of SONA. On the 15th of February, there is a briefing by the National Empowerment Fund on its annual report. Now, members, I would ask you to now begin to give very serious attention to the comment that was made yesterday by the CEO of the IDC. You won't believe it, DG, for the 30 months that we have been serving in this parliament, yesterday was the first time we engaged with IDC. Because we have 9 departments of government plus the entities reporting to us. So we'll have to do things differently and take very seriously the point that is made by Honorable Faber very regularly, and I'm saying that to you, DG, because you would be one of those that we would be pestering with us all the time, that we look at the possibility of having video conferencing. So we'll have our select committee meetings, but then also look at video conferencing. Otherwise, we won't be able to see all the, what we call, institutions or entities. So National Empowerment Fund, which is within DTI, may be one of those, and they're related to the work of the IDC. We're okay with that, members, that we look very seriously, Rebecca, at the video conferencing as well. That's on the 15th of February. On the 22nd of February, we will have a briefing by the South African Bureau of Standards on its annual report. And when I looked at this program, we've never met with the SABS. First time. Right? On the 28th of February to the 1st of March will be our committee strategic planning. Now, if you ask me, I would say that we've done well with the strategic planning, but we can do better. There's a lot of planning, but there's not enough strategy. So please, members, apply your minds now already to that strategic planning conference. You will get copies of this. On the 8th of March, we will have the briefing by the National Credit Regulator. On the 15th of March, we'll have a briefing for the ratification of South Africa's accession to the establishing of the Advisory Center on the WTO. Gigi, when you do that to us, please make sure that you can give us up-to-date meeting information on the U.S. position on the WTO, because we hear rumors about U.S. withdrawal from the WTO. On the 22nd of March, we will have a briefing by Durko on the withdrawal of South Africa from the ICC. Then on the 27th to the 31st of March, we'll have our committee oversight. Committee oversight in March. And then that will be followed by a constituency period. Honourable members, normally there are no problems with these. We will share the document with you, and we hope that you could also support that we proceed with the program. I see Honourable Timuni and Honourable Faba. Noted.
I've got a few points to submit to be incorporated in the program. The one is the oversight. Can it be on record that it's in Mpumalanga?
Well, we proposed it yesterday. Normally we don't put it on the program, but let's hear from the other members, seeing that you're raising it now. Let's interrupt that point.
Okay.
Are there any members that has a problem? We normally circulate to the province that we have this oversight scheduled from Mpumalanga. Any problems with that? No, we haven't.
Yeah. Since the beginning of this term, this committee was never in Mpumalanga.
We've not been to Mpumalanga. We haven't been.
No.
We've been to Eastern Cape, we've been to Gauteng, and we've been to Northern Cape and Northwest. And Limpopo.
What was that anyway we went to Cook and Eastern?
No.
You went for a conference, the tourism conference.
Yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't a committee.
No, let me
you went as a member. Okay, there's agreement. Next point.
The second point, Chair, is around issues of capacity building for a committee. Training. Can we have maybe a researcher assisting us with some small audit of training needs of the committee so that we begin to inform when we go to our strategic plan, to inform our plan as to what kind of training we will would love to have and engage as a committee. I offer the view, Chair, that in my view or my conviction is that this committee is actually supposed to be ambassadors in the making. What is wrong with us going to a course that prepares us to that, especially those who are of my age, you know?
I know, I agree.
The second part is that of monitoring and oversight on DIRCO and international relations. I'm not sure if we're doing justice on this one. Can we have a presentation, not from DIRCO, from an independent institution like an academic institution, how best, what are the best practices on doing oversight on matters of international relations? And I think that can also be packaged with our strategic plan session as a committee. The last one, the fourth point, is around the entities that we're supposed to oversee as a committee. Can we request researchers to list all entities under all departments are performing oversight on,
so that we can be able to do the researchers will do an audit as to what entities have we touched at least it from the beginning of this term and which ones are outstanding. And some of the entities have got subsidiaries, by the way, Jay. Can we also have information on which subsidiaries? I was surprised yesterday when IDC spoke here. Some of the entities are here of them for the first time, and I'm supposed to be monitoring and doing oversight on those entities, and yet I don't even know them. Can we get at least a complete list of all entities and their subsidiaries to both on both committees, the international relations and economic development? That's my submission, Chair. Thank you.
But that has been given to us, Honourable Timunye. She's not here now.
Okay.
We asked the secretary it was during the time that I was acting on the Committee on Economic and Business Development. I can't get to a name now. Help me with the name again, Honourable Ntebe, the PA to that, Shamila. I asked Shamila to compile that for us, and she's done it. Maybe we need to do it again. Nozibo? No, I can't give instructions here to Nozibo. I give it to you. No? Just take it up with Shamila again, because she has it. Let her just send it to all the members again. On the other point that you have raised about the academic institution and the strategic planning, I think that as Chair, you and I can work on that. There's no problems with that, particularly with the training as well. Just where do we slot it in? Appreciate it, Honourable Faber.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I listened to the whole program as you spoke around about the March month. I would like to suggest that both our secretaries do email it to us, that we have it up front, because then we can also plan our first term or our first quarter of the year accordingly. Secondly, I asked you about 2 weeks ago, Chairperson, as I am the representative on ICT, there is a new parliamentary app. Sally is working with it with a whole group of people on the ICT. I would like our secretaries to, as soon as possible, get acquainted with the system. It will be introduced by the speaker, etc., etc. But the most important part is that our secretaries are already getting involved with Sally and with that ICT guys, so that we can get all the information on that app. It will make it so much easier for this whole committee to go to your app eventually, if our committee can be one of the first committees, or our first two clusters, that can be operating on the Paperless Parliament application. So, Chairperson, I'd really put it on your heart that you really not wait till when it happens, but that this two clusters can actually be almost two of the trial clusters that can run on this. It will make it so much easier. Agendas coming through the secretaries on the new app. It's a beautiful application. We can actually get training. You can ask that they can train us. It will take one session, and all MPs should be able to understand it. It's not a difficult system. Thank you, Chair. That's just the input.
Honourable Faber, Honourable Faber. I wanted to say the same thing, but through the chair. The problem, we're asking you, Honourable Faber, to raise it with the guys in ITC, that the system is really problematic. I mean, I have a problem where... Not the new app. We have an apology. We have an apology from the IT department. Because you try and download email messages in your office and you cannot connect to the Wi-Fi of government. So they must improve on that. We can't give up what we have. We want to be paperless, but they are frustrating us. So we concur with you that yes, we would want to be one of the first, but to also then urge them that they might make sure they offer us a car that can be driven. Please conclude on that.
Thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson, I understand that there's Wi-Fi issues, etc., and I mean, surely they will sort it out. I'm talking purely about a new application that has been developed for MPs. It's called the Parliamentary App. It's an application that is actually making work so much easier. If Martins puts anything on that, it will immediately, if Gerard and anyone on this committee goes into it, it will tell you exactly what agendas are for that committee. It will give you all the information on that committee that is happening. So it is applications, it's a parliament app that's been developed. And it is actually working. Some of the National Assembly committees are already working on it. And I would just ask that our secretary, through you, see if we can be one of the first select committees that can get involved. And let's trial that. So it's not about the Wi-Fi so much. I understand and I hear your comments on that. But as I say, that we start to actually start be the first committees to use this new app that Parliament has developed. Thanks.
Honourable members, any other business? Can we adjourn? The meeting is adjourned. Thanks very much. Oh.